Welcome to the VO Tourism Podcast, and I'm Kojo Benton-Williams. VO Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. In today's episode, the chairperson of the Rwanda Tours and Travel Association, Bonita Mutoni, sheds light on the state of preparedness of the association for the tourism restart. Bonita, whose niche is in the area of luxury high-end tourism, believes building back better will mean African destinations should rethink their models when pitching for business to the region. So Bonita, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Kojo. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Okay, can you introduce yourself? I mean, for the purpose of my listeners.
Okay, so, of course, my name is Bonita Mutoni. I have been in the industry for probably over a decade. I'm based in Rwanda, so that's really where I started my travel and tourism journey. Just to give you a brief background, I have worked, so really my space is really the luxury and the high-end tourism. So one thing that I have done is I have worked for Akagi Aviation. I was a commercial manager there. It's a helicopter company. And then I worked for an investment company called Dubai Wild Africa that owns a property called Nyungwe Forest Lodge. And I work for the one and only. So I'm director of sales and marketing for the one and only properties in Rwanda. And I'm also the chairperson of the Rwanda Tourism Travels Association, which I have been for two terms. And I'm the founder of Uberlux Safaris, which was one of the leading DMCs in Rwanda.
Wow, you wear many hats. Now, I may want to start with the Rwanda Tours and Travel Association. And again, it was good to see you in Kigali during the visit of the Ghanaian delegation to Rwanda. Can you tell us more about the Rwanda Tours and Travel Association? I mean, you are the chairperson, but what's your operation? What do you do?
Actually, I have got an exco. So this is not just me. So we actually sit under the Tourism Chamber. So the Tourism Chamber has, we have different associations. So the Rwanda Tourism Travel Association, which I'm the chairperson. You've got the Rwanda Hospitality Association, the Safari Guides Association, and then the universities as well. And I think the key thing for us sitting under the Tourism Chamber is to really work collaboratively, because what we found initially is we kind of used to work sort of like standalone associations, but we needed to work together for a common goal. One of the things that we do is policy. So we kind of communicate with Rwanda Development Board, who is in charge, who's the government body in charge of tourism in Rwanda. So we basically have conversations, and the beautiful thing about being in Rwanda is we have a very progressive government. We work very closely together in really sort of establishing how, A, we position the destination, B, what sort of markets that we are going into together to actually get your international tourists that are to come into the destination, but also now looking at Africa. I think Africa is one of the big markets that we are certainly looking into, and the UAE and the emerging markets. I think those are quite a few quite things that we are doing together. As a chairperson of the association, we have about 120 members. We certainly encourage the young entrepreneurs to get into the industry. It's a thriving industry. Of course, all of us have been through the last, the last year where we kind of went through a pandemic. But what we're seeing is there's still interest in coming into the destination, but that is because we have been jointly marketing the destination with RDB. So the key thing for us as an association, we're the private sector, but we work you know, collaboratively with the government and Rwanda Development Board to make sure that we're pushing the same agenda, which is to make sure that our destination, people are aware of our destination, people are coming to the destination. We're offering that seamless service. We're making sure that Rwanda, which used to be a 3-night destination, we're pushing it to be, you know, an 8-night destination. So I think that's something that's quite key, is to make sure people are discovering the entire destination and rather than focusing on the gorilla trekking, which Rwanda used to be renowned for. So, yes, so key thing is, you know, we have, you know, annual meetings with our members. We represent the members in terms of, you know, in the instance that there are any changes or policy, we certainly represent them and make sure that A, they're represented. B, I think because we kind of want to lead tourism as private sector led. I think we want to make sure that it is. And I think just generally working together so that, and that's the beauty about work, as I said, working with the government is just working together in order for us to make sure that we're going to the right markets. We are establishing relationships with, you know, the travel agents, the international travel agents, the wholesalers, and making sure that we are getting clients into the destination. And then while they're on ground, one of the things that we do as the association is making sure that our members have specific standards. So standard in terms of, what does standards mean? Standard means I'm making sure that they have, you know, the right driver guides who will accompany the clients while they're here. Because you've got to remember that, you know, our clients spend quite a bit of time with the driver guides. So making sure that they are educated, they're informative, they're able to learn to be able to give the client space when they do need the space, making sure that the cars that they have are suitable and comfortable for our guests, you know, making sure that they have, you know, things like Wi-Fi, you've got your maps, you know, the basic things that, you know, a client certainly needs, and going above and beyond. I think that's quite important. What we also do for our members is making sure that we are training them. So we have trainings quarterly, and this is really to get members to really think, you know, on the level of the international client. What does the international consumer want? One of the things that we have certainly been focusing on, especially during COVID, was making sure that we are looking at digital market trends and seeing how we're training them to sort of be digital savvy and look at how they're looking at their websites and really seeing how they can actually reach direct consumers as well, as we're seeing a rise of direct consumers. So I think the key thing is making sure we're working collaboratively with RDB and making sure that our members understand that there's specific standards and qualities that an international or an African guest expect when they do come to Rwanda, and making sure that the journey for them is seamless. And also having them think creatively and building product that will enable our clients to stay in the destination longer. So those are a few key things that we're working on.
No, I think you've given an extensive overview of what the association does. But if you know, if I may want to take you back a bit, what form of or what kind of support system? I mean, you've mentioned, you know, building their skill, you know, in terms of applying the digital tools and all of that. But what other forms of support did they, you know, receive from the association under your chairperson?
What other forms of support? Yes. I think one of the key things that we've been working on is especially, like, for example, I think something that we have done is especially when we had the pandemic, looking at one of the things that our government did was the Economic Recovery Fund. And one of the industries that they looked at was the tourism industry. So that's what we have done is we're speaking with the banks. Not just the banks, we're speaking with, you know, specific, you know, people like your MasterCard. So these are some of our partners. Actually, MasterCard is a very huge partner of the Tourism Chamber to see how they can actually support our members in this time. So I think that was one thing that was quite key, is how do we support our members in this time? The key thing for us is making sure that we are not just, I think, reviving the industry. I think what's happened is, you know, travel sort of halted. One of the key things that we wanted to make sure is that our members are not closing shop, to encourage them to stay open, and therefore speaking with, you know, the banks on their behalfs, to make sure that they have access, because we, through the Economic Recovery Fund, they have grants. And some can get loans. So we work together with the Tourism Chamber to basically be the link between the banks and, you know, the foundation, to in order to enable them to be have some finances to go through this last period. I think that was quite key, and that's something that's been significant that we have done.
Have you seen some progress in terms of how things are faring now, from your association point of view?
A progress in terms of?
In terms of, you gave them some stimulus or, you know, some packages. Now, how things, for example, the tourism restart, when you've been open, I think, since July, right? I mean, if I'm I'm right, are your members, you know, beginning, obviously, you will not see the same restart, the level of the pandemic, I mean, before the pandemic, but are you seeing some form of confidence creeping in the sector in Rwanda?
Absolutely. I think the last few years we were aggressively marketing the destination. I know I was together with, you know, RDB going out to every single not just every single trade show. I must say it was, you know, trade shows that we felt were talking about experiential travel, which is quite key. We went to the niche travel exhibitions, for example, like your Pure, your experience in Australia. We were doing roadshows together in the US, which is our key source market. I think there has been appetite. One of the things that we did do as well is get the right media. So we've had the top publications coming into the destination. So if you see from 2019 and early 2020, we had your, you know, from your Forbes, you had your Vogue, you had your Telegraph. So all the big, and this is in the specific markets, like, you know, from the US, you have Departures and Travel and Leisure. So these are, you know, publications that really focus on travel. So we have actually got them into the destination, which was quite key. They have talked about the destination. So there was appetite, actually. And 2020 was going to be one of our best years yet. 2019 had been such a great year. And the thing is, the clients certainly still want to come to the destination. Of course, you have the restrictions on travel. What we have seen is most of them didn't cancel. So that was very encouraging. They were not canceling their trips. They were more postponing them to, you know, later on in 2021 and more in 2022, of course, after they've got their vaccine. So their appetite, they really want to come to the destination. The destination is still very sexy. People want to come. People want to leave an impact. I think one of the key things that we found about Rwanda is, you know, it ticks the boxes for a sustainable destination. And that was, it's one of the key travel trends you find. We're seeing that. And especially in the high-end and the luxury market, your ostentatious luxury travel has changed. What your perceptions of what used to be luxury is changing. People want impactful travel. People want to do philanthropic activities. People want to be able to protect, you know, and our story, we used to have critically endangered mountain gorillas, but because of the conservation efforts, they're now endangered. So we have, as a destination, we're certainly very attractive to your luxury client. And I still feel that over the next, we are seeing the business coming in. Of course, it did come to a halt because of the restrictions and travel, but now we're certainly seeing the pickup for Q4 of this year and certainly for next year.
Okay. Now, we all know, and with all the data, with all the analysis and from the experts, tourism will never be the same, you know, going forward or post-COVID. Mm. Now, obviously, you are a key player. You know, the Thoughts and the Travel Association, you are key players in Rwanda's tourism drive. What do you think that the destination need to do to brace themselves up? Because things will be the same. So you're looking at 3 to 4 years for transition. how do you get your destination, which is a high end? I mean, I must add that with respect to leisure, it's a high end, but you're very competitive with respect to MICE. How, what's your proposition for your destination to restart tourism and any avenues that they may want to use to shore the deficit?
I think the key thing is, I think one of the things is, how did we handle COVID, right? I think as a destination, we did, and honestly, in comparison to the other travel destinations, we certainly handled, I believe that we handled it quite well. I think in terms of, you know, any time we saw a slight rise in the numbers of you know, people that had COVID in the cities, we would actually go into lockdown. So we treated it very seriously in terms of the policies that are in place and making sure people are adhering. And as it's not just people in hospitality, just to let you know, it's everybody in the country was making sure that they are wearing their masks, they are sanitizing. We're still at 30% capacity in offices, so you don't have your full staff, so you have the flexibility of working from home. And this is really just to keep the numbers down. In Kigali, we had a curfew. We still have a curfew, actually. Our curfew is at 9 p.m. And this is really to try and keep the numbers quite low. And I think that is a great story to tell in terms of as a destination. And what happens is, right now you're actually getting agents that will say, Benita, like, I've been getting calls since Nairobi just recently closed, and just to ask us what is happening, is Kigali going to close? And I'm saying, well, I don't think we are, because our numbers are quite low. We're still adhering. And just so you know, in the hospitality industry, and for example, other hotels, you find 195% of the staff have been vaccinated. So these are key things. One of the things is to make sure in the hospitality industry, in the tourism industry, everybody is getting vaccinated, especially people that will be, you know, in touch with our clients, and making sure that they understand. And it was the trainings that we have at the resorts. And just so you know, at every hotel as well, you do have, we are testing. So every 2 weeks we are testing our staff. So even though you have been vaccinated, you are still getting tested regularly. You are still, your temperature is being checked every day at the hotels. So it's still, as usual, trying to make sure that we are adhering to all the policies, adhering to all the regulations in terms of really managing COVID. And I think that's a fantastic message. I think to restart tourism, we need to certainly communicate it to the outside world, so people understand that as a destination, we have certainly been doing that, and we are continuing to do that to make sure that we are, you know, keeping our clients safe. I think that for me is a huge thing that we have done, which it just needs to be communicated to the international market and to the outside world that this is what we are doing. Because I think our story is really great. You know, to have 95% of your staff vaccinated at the hotels is fantastic. And we're really lucky. And we have a government that's efficient.
It's a great story of how things were done. And when we were there, it again proved that, you know, the restrictions were adhered to, and people, you know, it has inadvertently become like a way of life. This is all the places. Now, you know, your source markets are in a mess. Your core source markets right now, the States, the Europe. Yeah. Okay. How do you, because at the meeting with the Ghanaian delegation, you threw up a proposition of how you're looking to diversify, you know, as a destination. Walk me through that.
Yeah, so I think it's a good thing to, I think it's something that we really thought through, especially when it had just happened. Is okay, fine, you know. We have, and I must say, as Africa, not just Rwanda, we have dominantly, our source markets have always been the US, number one, and that's for the entire Africa. You have other source markets, like, you know, you've got Central Europe, you've got Southern Europe, you've got the UK. I think some of the emerging markets for us have been, Australia has been a big market that has been emerging over years, but that's specifically for gorilla trekking. We're having groups that are coming in to gorilla trek. Markets that we have actually been quite active in, I'll tell you, is Asia. So I know me and the team have been to, you know, China, Singapore. We attend ILTM every year in Singapore. And then some other markets have been the UAE. And what we discovered is we really haven't been looking in-house. You know, we haven't been looking at ourselves and the content, which is such a shame. And I think what we thought is, you know what, let's really look at how we're putting more effort into Africa. It's you know, Africans are generally spending money out of the continent. They're actually going to Dubai, they're going to Paris, they're going to London for holidays with their families. And this has become the norm. You know, you're African and has the highest. Okay, even South Africa, actually. I must say South Africa has been a big destination for Africans to travel to. But in our part of the world, we haven't. And I'll commend, you know, Kenya for domestic travel, because you see when, you know, during Easter, of course, now things have changed. But during Easter, you have quite a few Kenyans that are going to the coast, you know, going to Diani, going to Lamu, and they absolutely, it has been a big market for them. I think we also have to look on the continent. I think we have got, and I think what people need to understand is, what is luxury? Luxury is changing, you know. What is you know, we, as Africans, when we do get money, we want to aspire to have, you know, these good things. But the good things are already on the continent. It's just, are we getting the word out there? And I think we must certainly do that. And yesterday I was speaking to CNBC Africa and Forbes Africa and saying, how do I get, you know, these properties out there? What can I do to get these Africans coming to the market? So I think there's a lot of work on our part in really reaching sort of communicating, so doing a lot of PR and communication on the continent, and sort of media, making sure we are the media is out there telling our story of what we have to offer, because we do have the luxury properties. And even I'll tell you, Akwadro, I was talking to somebody from Labadi Beach, you know, from your team. I was just trying to get as much information on Ghana, because I've actually been there. But I was only there for a conference. And you know what happened? As soon as the conference ended, I left, which is such a shame. So what we really need to do is for people to understand that, you know, we're not conference destinations. We have got stunning facilities that have, you know, swimming pools that you can bring your family to and they'll actually enjoy them and spend a week or so. So I think there's a lot of educating that we have to do. As I said, lots of comms, lots of PR. And one of the key things that we have done as Rwanda is we then looked at discounting, and that's what we did. We looked at, as a private sector, we sat together with RDB, how do we then have, you know, affordable packages for the continent? And that's something that we did. So just so you know, for gorilla trekking in Rwanda, it's $500 in comparison to $1,500 for an international guest, and that's for African citizens. At the resorts, for example, the properties here, most of them slashed their prices by 70%, just so that we could, you know, get the word out there that we're ready for you. These are the affordable packages that we have to offer. Please come to the destination. But I think we need to do a lot more work you know, PR and the communications, and also working together with our national airlines. Like for us, like we have fantastic connections with Rwanda Air. And Rwanda Air goes to from South Africa to Kenya, Uganda, to Gabon, to Ghana. I mean, it really is connected to Dubai. So you find we have got quite good connections. So it's really working together with our carriers to making sure that we're looking at affordable packages and affordable rates just specifically for leisure and your incentives. I think incentives, it's a good thing you touched on the incentive. We have stunning facilities for the incentive market. That is something that we certainly want to do, is working together with, you know, your corporates on the continent, working with the HR teams to be able to push out our packages for the incentive. So there's a lot of work that we're wanting to do, but we have started with the discounted packages. It's just really getting the word out there now.
Okay. Now, one thing that we all learned, during the pandemic and even now, is the fact that the metric for performance in terms of travel and, you know, destination and responsible and sustainable, all the jargons you can find in the tourism space, that people are not just high volumes, is something that is tending to be something of the past in terms of mass numbers. Okay, now as an expert in luxury and high end destination, would you say, I mean, most Africans should rethink about their pitch as a destination, and have a different model? Because, you know, gone are the days, in fact, it's still happening, where we tout 2.3 million arrivals and 10 billion arrivals, you know, etc., to be a success story. What's your narrative on that? And what do you think that destinations should do? Because now, because of health issues, health protocols, and what the pandemic has taught us, is beginning to be something that people really want to look at a niche way of doing things.
I agree. Yeah, I certainly agree. I think, of course, now you're going to see lower volumes of people traveling to the destination. And these are people that either their businesses were not affected by the pandemic. Because one thing, let's all be real with each other. Most businesses have been affected. Most people have lost jobs, which is, it has, you know, the effect that, you know, the pandemic has had on, you know, businesses worldwide has been really, it's been terrible. People are losing jobs. And this is from your Kisos markets. One thing that we are finding is your high-end client is still traveling. So they're, no, of course, they perhaps have been affected, but they still have the income to be able to travel. So I think that is something that we should certainly look at. As a continent, I think it should be a niche destination for travelers that are coming in. I think it's the way you are packaging it. As I said, it's not even just about buzzwords, because in general, it's not just buzzwords in travel. It's actually how people are consuming. So not just let's take travel away. Let's talk about retail. Even in retail, you're finding that one is, if they are going to shop, or if you're looking at the luxury brands, you say Louis Vuitton or your Dior, they're getting, you know, Africans involved in their designs. How is that inclusive? And then also looking at how, you know, that is also going to be sustainable. So that story of, you know, we are buying from a destination that is supporting the local community. These are things that are not going to change, because this is, people are aware now. People are really educated. The younger travelers who, you know, and you know, there's a rise of, you know, younger millionaires, sort of the millennials. So, you know, you have even from 25, you have people that are in tech that are making quite a bit of money. And they do want, what do they want to spend on travel? They buy, you know, luxury goods. But all of this luxury goods are really looking at, you know, recyclable, sustainable. So it's not just a buzzword. This is what is happening. So the luxury is changing. It's no longer, I want a Ferrari and I want to go to, you know, a city like Dubai and show off. That has completely changed. It's, I want to go somewhere where it's going to impact the local community. I want to go somewhere where I'm actually going to sit in nature, in pristine nature, nature that's not touched, and then be able to breathe clean air. Remember, now people are into veganism. They want to eat local produce. So it's the world is changing, and from our diets and from the retail, from the things that we're buying. And this, you certainly see, has gotten into travel now. So people are just being really conscious. So we have conscious travelers now. So I certainly feel that as Africa, as a continent, we should really think about how we're packaging for this niche client, because it's true. The volumes won't be coming in. It will just be your, you know, people that can afford to travel, that haven't really been affected by this pandemic. And those will be the high end, and they will have super high expectations. But one thing that you must understand as well is the word luxury can be, it's like, I think people do not understand what it is, because luxury for a conscious traveler would really be, I'm getting something authentic to that destination. I'm actually, I've gone to Ghana, and the culture there is so rich. and I've met with the local people and I'm eating local food, that for them is luxury. So I think it's the way that we are packaging it, but we have such niche products that people want to experience, and we should certainly be packaging them as that, not as a mass destination. Yeah.
All right, thanks. Now, what do you think, I mean, will be the hospitality sector's biggest challenge, restarting tourism? You're restarting now, but from where you sit as a main player, what do you anticipate in seeing that will be the sector's biggest drawback?
Oh, I always try to be positive. I think what we really need to do is get our word out there and tell our story, because I think honestly, compared to the source markets, we've done a fantastic job, and kudos to us as a continent in terms of how we've managed this pandemic. Honestly, I think that is something that we must communicate. That is something that, I mean, you cannot, the numbers of deaths that you had in Europe in comparison to, you can't even compare them. So I think that's something we must communicate. We must tell our story, because people don't know this. People are still assuming that, well, you know, it's just, there's a lot of work that we need to do to communicate what is actually happening on the continent, because we have such a good story. So I think the drawback is the perceptions that people have. I think the drawback really is people are just going to be cautious. Incredibly cautious about traveling, especially and this is, it has been, I must say, as these international markets have been a bit of a mess in how they've been handling, you know, lockdown, and then, you know, when, because we got into lockdowns much earlier than they did, and then what happened is, of course, as you know what happened, you know, the numbers kept rising, and so then, you know, we've been put on the red list. And some of the things that I just don't understand is, a country like Rwanda, how are we on the red list? It's mind-boggling that we're on the red list of some countries, yet we have, you know, we've had much less numbers than they have. So I think it's just making sure we're communicating, because the perception out there is still that, you know, it's still the continent, it's still the dark continent where, my goodness, how we don't know how they've probably handled COVID, and, you know, they just do not know this. So I think one of the things that we really need to work on is our communication and our story, and telling it through the right media, and making sure the direct consumer and not just the travel trade, because we do communicate to the travel trade, but I think reaching to that direct consumer is incredibly important, and that's, we've got to do a lot of work on that.
Let's talk one and only. And
yes.
What difference are you making in the luxury market or in the hospitality space? Because, you know, before you, I mean, you you opened, you know, there being a number of high-end or luxury brands in Rwanda. What is it that you are doing uniquely from all these properties?
I think, of course, the facilities are incredible. I must say, I'm very, very proud to say we have the best facilities in Rwanda. But it's not just that. It's really, for us, it's not just about the facilities and what we offer. We do offer on-property experiences, so our packages are all-inclusive. You get experiences on-property, so you get two complimentary experiences as a guest staying with us. And we don't really see ourselves as lodgers. So as you have visited the properties, you see we actually have a fully fledged spa. We've got a Club One, which has a gym and a swimming pool. We've got the Jack Hanna Cottage. So we have got different facilities where people can wine and dine. You can eat out of the yoga deck. So in terms of the experiences that we offer, for example, our wellness, from yoga to Reiki to, you know, chakra balancing. So we're doing incredible experiences that we offer to the client that are complimentary and are inclusive of their package. But not just that, I think our story is more of the upskilling of our Rwandan colleagues. I think that for me is really what our story is, and what One and Only has done in the destination. I'll just say, for example, we have got on the 7th of April, we're going to be sending 30 of our staff to Dubai, to the Royal Atlantis Hotel, to get training for a month. So we really have invested in our random colleagues to make sure that, you know, they are, and especially with, you know, with the luxury choir, they're incredibly demanding. We've had to train our staff to actually understand who the luxury consumer is. Of course, you know, basic things like, you know, teaching them English that we do regularly, from your food and beverage, from, you know, this is the difference between a cafe latte and an Americano, and doing it properly. As a waitress, how you were serving, how you're communicating to the client and giving them that space, where they can enjoy their meal. So I think that is something that we've certainly invested in, is really upskilling and the training our staff to international standards, and not just international standards, very, you know, for 5-star and over standards. I think that was quite key for us, is coming to the destination. As Rwanda was a very young hospitality destination, we found that we struggled in terms of, you know, getting people, and it's true, it's a young destination in hospitality, and most of our staff were not trained to the standard or level. But you know what? We took them on and said, you know what? We're going to upskill you, we're going to train you, and we believe in you. I think that was one, that's our ethos, is really investing in our staff. And not just that, I think if you look at, you know, the nearby community, one of the most important things is how do they feel that we fit in? We didn't just want to be this luxury resort that's right in the middle of Kinigi, and then a local, you know, Rwandan that's from Kinigi is walking around and does not feel like he's part of this. So we wanted to involve our community. You find that even in the construction of the property, the stone walls, all of that was done locally by our Rwandan, our incredible Rwandan community that's in Kinigi. One of the key things as well is buying locally, so buying local produce. So from the vegetables that you, as a guest, you are eating, that's all bought locally. From the uniforms that we are wearing, that is actually, and we have literally helped the local community start businesses. And that was key for us, is how do we support them? So even our uniforms are made locally. The crafts that you will see in our retail stores, in our boutique stores, those are also bought locally. Of course, we've had to train them to understand that, okay, for our specific guest, this has to be made in this sort of way. So sort of you need to, that attention to detail, I think that was quite important, training them on that. So they understand the level and the quality of, you know, the product that they are giving us, because we're sort of giving it to a very demanding client. But I think the key thing was supporting our local community. Even the coffee that we are buying is from an all-women's cooperative that is nearby us. So just really making sure that we are supporting, uplifting Rwandan colleagues, and really uplifting the training, and making sure that, you know, we're growing with the hospitality sector in Rwanda. I think that really is our story, apart from us being a luxury facility.
Okay, now as we wrap up our conversation, tell me what you do for leisure if you're not running around with marketing, with meetings, with operations.
Yes. I'm a very social person, Quadro. I do.
What do I do for leisure? You're very busy.
I am. But I must say, I'll tell you what, Quadro. I think for me, the industry is, you know, we have colleagues around the world from, you know, every part of the world. But I think the beauty about it is you develop relationships, you become friends. I love to entertain. So I think most of the time you see me at Gorilla's Nest entertaining Travel Trade, having dinner with them and having drinks. So I absolutely love that. I do enjoy travel. So when I do, I am traveling for business. I will try to spend at least, you know, a few days in a city that I wouldn't have been to enjoy the city. You know, like if I'm going to Marrakesh for Pure, then I will sort of stay 2 or 3 days to enjoy the city and actually be alone. I think I like to immerse myself. I like to do things a lot, because of course with our businesses, we're staying in the nicer hotels and you're in a conference. But I think the key thing is to really eat the local food, go out into the local market. So I do that. I do that a lot. And I absolutely enjoy traveling. So I have missed it. it has been a struggle for me not being able to see my industry colleagues on the travel fairs and not being able to sort of just be in a different city and immerse myself in the different cultures and learn and I do enjoy learning when I travel. So I think that is something that I do enjoy. And entertaining, I think that's one of the things that I do enjoy the most.
No, excellent. I mean, today is the last day of the Women's Month, right? And yes. I thought it was my last question, I mean, the previous one. But do you think that the industry has done more to uplift or give women, leadership roles to correspond with the 54% of them in the sector?
Yes, I agree with you 100%. I think you find that business owners, people in hospitality, people in, we actually, one thing that we do have driver guides that are women that are fantastic, that I usually recommend. These are safari driver guides. I think that's something that we're certainly doing. I think as women, we also sort of, we mentor each other as well. I get quite a few students at the local universities asking to spend time with me. And I do that when I do have the time. It's making sure that, as women, we're uplifting each other. I think we perhaps might be more attentive to detail. and I think it's important to, as you said, 54% of the women in government here are women. And I think it's important that translates to the tourism industry. We're certainly doing that. As you know, I'm the chairperson of the industry. The chief tourism officer of Rwanda, Belize, is a woman. The CEO, Claire, is a woman. I think we all work really well together. And I think the most important thing is how we learn from each other. That is, for me, quite important. Is we're all developing each other. We're all upskilling each other. We're all enabling each other to develop in the industry and learn. And Kojo, as you know, we learn every day. Every day there's a new travel trend. Every day you've got to learn something new. So I think it's important for us to be able to learn and push ourselves. And I think that's what we do here really well.
No, Bonita, thank you so much for your time.
It's an absolute pleasure, Kojo.